You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a weekly podcast of serialized fiction by Tansy Rayner Roberts. We are reading through Julia Agrippina's Secret Family Bestiary, which is available as part of the Love and Roman Punk collection over at 12th Planet Press. Part 4. Naiad. From when we were young, my sisters and I loved to swim. No matter which country we were in, no matter if the soldiers were nearby, my mother encouraged it. If you can swim, she told us, you can escape. In Rome, we could no longer swim in the open air, but there were the baths, as large as lakes, and we honed our skills. I swam with Drusilla and Livilla every day, even the morning after my wedding, where my body was aching painfully from my introduction to a wife's duty. When we tired of the heat and bustle of Rome in summer, we would travel to a family villa on the coast, though we women were not permitted to set foot on Tiberius's island of boy children and debauchery, as our brother was. Caligula will never kill him, Drusilla sighed one day. He has pledged his loyalty to Tiberius. We owe that man no loyalty after what he did to our mother and the boys, I muttered. You know our brother, said Livilla. He can't bear to give up his performance. If Uncle Tiberius sensed even a hint of disloyalty, he would kill us all in an instant. One of us, and later for the life of me I could not remember which, said, not if we kill him first. We looked across the bay, all three of us, calculating whether it might be possible to swim all the way to the island. The first time we tried, we gave up too soon, exhausted and bruised by the current. The second time, as our muscles screamed the impossibility of the task at us, the naiads came. They were green and blue and nothing coloured, with sharp teeth and gleaming eyes, and my first thought was that they'd come to drag us under, to finish us off. But they swam beside us and under us, giving us strength, whispering with disapproval when any of us flagged. We reached the island not long after noon and found my uncle sleeping in the sun, surrounded by the drowsy bodies of freshly bitten boys. This was our island once, the naiads whispered. My sisters and I were dripping and smeared with seaweed, half naiad ourselves, and we hissed along with them, drunk on our own borrowed power. Take it back, we told them. They pounced, the naiads, and we pounced with them. The taste of my uncle's blood was the sweetest thing I have ever drunk. By the time Caligula came along the beach to find himself the new emperor of Rome, we had slithered back into the sea. And when he came by boat to break the news to us, we had recovered our sensibilities and respectable dress. We were the sisters of the emperor now, after all. We had a public reputation to uphold. I never became a naiad again, and I do not think my sisters did either, but after that day we always salted our food more heavily and took great pleasure in swimming in the sea. That whole first year as the sisters of the emperor, as we gloried in our new public role, fine seats in the theatre and the restoration of honours to our dead mother, as my husband's seed finally grew a baby inside me, the greatest luxury I enjoyed was to swim in the sea, drunk on salt and heady with the whispering song of the naiads. Peacock. Livia was not the first goddess of our family. Tiberius ignored his promise to her, and Caligula did likewise. For all their crimes, I cannot blame them for fearing the possibilities of Diwa Livia. Even after her death, we were all afraid of her. She was Lamia, after all. Who was to say she might not come back, given the least amount of encouragement? In any case, Caligula might have relented, as he always felt it was unlucky to break his word, even to the most dangerous of relatives, but events overtook him. The three of us were honoured with the glory usually given to a wife of an emperor. As it should be, we were Julias, and for the first time, Rome was ruled by a man who was not afraid of what that name meant. Caligula's wives were nothing but vessels for his children, and were of little account when he had Drusilla at his side, golden and glowing. She had always been his favourite, and he named her his heir, with Livilla and I honoured as her companions. The three of us were finally able to train openly with the soldiers and use our strength and power in service to the emperor. He never went anywhere without a sister to protect him. We were draped with jewels and precious metals, but these were weapons too. Everything we owned had an edge to it. Which was important because from the moment he became emperor, people were trying to kill our brother. For the first time, we had no close relatives to fear, as we were the last scions of our family, discounting stupid old Uncle Claudius, of course, who was rarely away from his books. But the curse of the Caesars continued, and magical creatures of all kinds turned against Caligula and his rule. I and my sisters fought bears, chimera, sphinxes, dragons, and all manner of beasts sent against my brother by foreign powers or priests who would prefer to rule the Senate without a Caesar in command. No emperor has ever had an honour guard as magnificent or glorious as Caligula's sisters. It lasted such a short time. Drusilla battled griffins one day, defending Caligula, while Livilla and I were attending to our babies, and she took a wound, barely a scratch, but it went bad, and no amount of magic could touch it. Caligula went half insane trying to save her. He wallowed in his Lamia nature, trying to bite the infection out of her, to drink the poisoned blood and spit it on the floor. She would have died, I think, no matter what, but his ministrations certainly hastened her departure. Our beloved Drusilla, then, was the first goddess of the Julian family. Caligula gave her priests and temples, and where the Caesar gods had the eagle, Drusilla had the peacock. The city of Rome worshipped her dutifully, in the hopes that their devotions would heal the emperor's pain. But nothing would heal Caligula. After that, he would not see or speak to me, and though Livilla managed to comfort him for a short while, he soon turned against her too. One of his wives bore a son, and he was so determined that the child was our sister reborn. We eventually helped her to swap the baby for a girl child out of fear for what he might do to the boy. The situation worsened, and for the sake of our families, Livilla and I left Rome, performing what imperial duties we could at a distance. Everything we heard of Caligula after that was awful. His rule became a new performance, one of maniacal grief and abuse of powers. He filled the palace with peacocks, talking to them as if they were Drusilla, feeding them from his plate, bathing them with sweet oils. When his rages got the better of him, he would strangle one of the birds with his bare hands, only to blame the nearest servant and send him to execution. Our hearts broke for him, but we stayed away until we heard that he was dead. He was the first emperor, as far as I know, not to die at the hands of a family member. It was the Senate and Praetorian Guard, sick with fear for their own families, who turned against him in the end. Had I been there, or Livilla, we could have taken the rule of the city in the name of Caligula's son, or hers, or mine. Then again, perhaps we would have torn ourselves apart, trying to decide which baby to elevate. We destroyed ourselves in any case. It merely took longer. By the time Livilla and I returned to the city with our families, daft old Uncle Claudius was on the throne. The cunning fellow had played the fool for 50 years, and the Praetorian Guard had set him on the throne, thinking he would be kindly, and the city might prosper, with Caligula out of the way. We knew better. That man was a grandson of Livia, and the only good person ever to come from her bloodline was our dear dead father. The first thing Emperor Claudius did was to name Livia a goddess. She had loathed him in life, the only one of her family who was crippled and useless, and yet he was good to her in death. It was the last good thing he did, for he followed that act by closing our sister's temple and ordering priests to slit the throats of the peacocks. I can understand that part in a way. He must have taken months to clean the filthy rooms where they'd been housed, to reclaim the palace as a place of business rather than a chaotic, stinking zoo. Part of me, though, wanted to kill him when I heard what he had done. Caligula's madness was infectious enough that it was like losing Drusilla all over again. I killed Uncle Claudius eventually, of course. We take our satisfactions where we can. Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter or Tumblr at SheepMightFly for updates to the podcast and occasional commentary. See you next week.